From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's Cool Science Radio. It's science and technology that's entertaining and accessible. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm John Wells. Good morning, Lynn. Today in the program, we'll also talk algorithms. Now, don't be scared because our next guest, Ali Amasawi, who, by the way, is an alumni of MIT's Engineering Systems Division and Carnegie Mellon's School of Computer Science and now works at Mozilla. He's joining us to help have fun and see the usefulness of algorithms.
I like that idea. Then we'll revisit an interview we conducted last month with local entrepreneurs Eric Miller and Dana Koontz. Now, they're founders of Avion. Avion is a turnkey lighting and home controls platform that makes smart lighting easy to install, easy to change, and easy to live with. Avion provides residential and commercial solutions in partnership with major lighting companies to retail and professional markets. Eric Miller, the CEO and co-founder, will be speaking on Friday as one of the presenters at the Thin Air Innovation Festival at OP Rockwell from 3 to 5:30. This is Cool Science Radio. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words.
Spend the day and cover billions of years at the Natural History Museum of Utah. The museum offers innovative exhibits and hands-on experiences. Native voices explore the traditions of Utah's native peoples. The Great Salt Lake Gallery tells the story of the largest saltwater lake in the Western Hemisphere. The Past Worlds exhibit includes more than a dozen new species of dinosaurs discovered right here in Utah. Visit nhmu.utah.edu. The Natural History Museum of Utah is a nonprofit organization and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with John Wells. Well, when someone told us, who we interviewed a few weeks ago, that solving the Rubik's Cube is really just about memorizing algorithms. Remember that, John?
Oh, boy.
I balked at that. I figured I'll never be able to memorize algorithms and solve the cube. But really, we ought not be scared off by algorithms. After all, they only allow Facebook to predict what we like and who we're around, and for Match.com to tell us who we might most be likely to date, and our future employers who can know more about us than we do even before our first interview. But our next guest joins us to have fun with the topic, so stay tuned. Ali Amasawi has a pretty impressive resume, MIT, Carnegie Mellon, but he's an average guy and he's entertaining. He joins us to demystify the concept of how algorithms rule our lives and lets us know how we can use them to make our lives better. His new book is called Bad Choices: How Algorithms Can Help You Think Smarter and Live Happier. Ali Amasawi, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Your book is so fun. And, you know, I think we are scared of algorithms if we don't work with them like you do on a regular basis. But you say that an algorithm is simply a series of unambiguous steps that achieve some meaningful objective in finite time. That seems simple. Can you explain that a little further?
Yeah, that is in fact how it's defined. It's a process. It has these steps that are unambiguous, and it does something useful. And you know, it's important for an algorithm to be to have that quality, because in computing, modern computers at least, they don't have the ability to reason about things. So we need to give them instructions that are clear so that they can give us back predictable behavior.
Okay. Well, that does sound simple. So if I take an algorithm, and you're applying it in your book, which is full of really fun illustrations and about 12 chapters showing us how we can apply algorithms to our own lives. You start off with matching your socks. Now, I'm sure we'd all love help with that, because everyone knows ultimately we can't match all of our socks.
Yes. So when I first started thinking about this project, I was interested in the question, how can we make algorithms compelling for the broadest audience? And one way of doing that is to make it familiar. And so when you think about the decisions that we make in everyday life, you find that a lot of them fit this definition that we just mentioned at the outset. And one of those decisions is this, you know, the situation of you having to go through laundry, for instance. And that's what the first chapter talks about. There is this character who has a pile of socks in front of her, and she wants to match the various pairs of socks in that pile. And so I asked my daughter, actually, who's five, I said, how would you go about doing that? And she said, yeah, I would take out a sock and I would look for its pair, and then I would, you know, do the match and put them to one side and then do the same for all the other socks. So that's one way of doing it. Another way would be to pick out a sock and then put it to one side and then pick out another sock and then see if there is a match. And if there is, you do the match. Otherwise, you put that to one side and so on. So for a small number of socks, it doesn't matter which of those two methods you choose. But as the number of socks increases, then you find that the second approach is much more efficient. And that was really the thing that I was most interested in conveying, that these alternative approaches, you only see their value when you think in terms of orders of magnitude.
Yes, and Ali, aren't a lot of these algorithms actually intuitive? We're kind of doing them automatically. The one I think of is logarithmic time, where you discard information. If you're going to, you know, let's go back 20 years ago when people actually looked at white pages, and I'm going to look up my co-host, Lynn Ware Peake, her last name starts with a P. I wouldn't start at the A's. I'd start somewhere in the P's, and if I got like PR, I'd go backwards, and if I got PA, I'd go forward. You know, it's just sort of an intuitive thing that we do, isn't it?
Yeah, I would imagine so in some cases. Actually, it's interesting because I approached the topic from the other way around. I had this set of fundamental algorithms that I then wanted to connect to everyday life. But, you know, there are these, I saw a piece in the New York Times a few days ago where they were doing the exact opposite. They were taking everyday life decisions that we make and showing how, you know, we are intuitive in a lot of cases when it comes to deciding how to be most efficient about them.
Yeah. Now, algorithms is a word that scares a lot of people. Another way to look at this or to describe it would be to, as you have a challenge in front of you, a problem, that you model different behaviors in your head for what might be the most effective or cost-effective or time-effective way of doing it. It's modeling choices. Is that also true?
Yeah, exactly. It's all about choices. It's all about trade-offs. It's all about deciding what quality you care about. So all the choices that you find in the 12 chapters in the book, they all want to maximize efficiency, right, be it in time or in space. So if efficiency is something you care about, then the choice that you make tries to optimize for that. But in some cases, you know, it's the case that we care about other qualities that might even be antithetical to efficiency. So in those cases, we would have a different model to kind of decide what to do.
So a couple of years ago, when Spotify was trying to figure out a way to provide choices to give ideas of music that they think people would like based on their earlier choices, is this how they start modeling different ideas? Do they actually do the math? Do they actually write the equations? I mean, how does all this happen at a corporate level?
Yeah, that's one of actually the more interesting innovations of the past years is these websites and apps that can predict what we might like. And you see it on Spotify, you see it on Facebook, you see it on Netflix. And, you know, there are a number of increasingly sophisticated ways of doing that. You know, the least sophisticated way is for them to say, to give you a random song and say, is this something you might be interested in? I know another thing they can do is they can look at all the songs that were listened to and rank them on some dimension and then present that curated list to you. And an even more sophisticated way is for them to do what's called link analysis, analyze the connections that exist in their data set, and then based on those infer things about what we might like. So for instance, if you and I, we listen to the same kinds of songs, then maybe I'd be interested in some of the songs that you've listened to that I've not listened to. So they can use some of those signals to make their determination.
So I'm wondering, Ali, if what you're trying to do here is sort of counter habits that we get into in our modern life, like multitasking. And, you know, you talked about efficiency and you said, if you care about efficiency, and I think we all know we should care about efficiency, but at the end of the day, we are distracted by all this multitasking that we do. An interesting chapter to me is your chapter 8, talking about how to get a job done, get to the end of a task. So would you talk about that?
Sure. There are a few interesting things about that topic. One is that you're right, there are these alternative ways that we could go about getting tasks done. And there are connections in each case to a concept in computer science. So you could prioritize based on, you know, some dimension of priority. You could prioritize on ease You know, if a task is easier to do, maybe you should start with that first. And then there's this other approach where you might context switch. You spend an hour on a task and then an hour on another task and so on. So each of those decisions depends on the type of work you're doing, if it's mechanical work or if it requires any kind of cognitive involvement. But the most interesting thing, I think, in that chapter is this message that I wanted to convey, that the tool that I'm pushing for in all the other chapters, you know, thinking in terms of orders of magnitude and rates of growth and how that's valuable and in terms of looking at the world, sometimes it breaks down. So in that chapter, you see that all the three methods that I talk about, they have just one line representing them in the chart, which is to say, in some cases, you know, you need another tool to decide which choice you ought to go with.
That's interesting. Well, in your three methods, as you talk about, work on one task for a bit, then switch to another, and then the method two is sort the task from easiest to hardest, and method three from the order of magnitude, as you say, or the priority. So what you're saying is if you're applying algorithmic thinking, you're still sort of thinking creatively to see which method to apply, because I mean, if you were reading, a book on how to get through your day most efficiently, it would tell you to start with the highest priority task.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing I worry about. I always worry about giving the message that there is this one way of doing things. There's a silver bullet, and if you follow it, you know, read this book, follow these steps, and you know, you'll do everything right. I think it's a bold claim to make, and one has to be careful with that. So I think, as passionate as I am about the things that I'm talking about in the various chapters and about this way of thinking at the world, I think it's also, as you point out, important to keep in mind that we always have to be critical, and we have to be think about things that within their context. There might be just idiosyncratic reasons to try something versus something else. But still, I think, you know, when you talk to a computer scientist, you get something similar to what you find in bad choices. If you talk to a mathematician, you'll get, you know, a different view of the world. Similarly for a journalist or a doctor. So I think in each of those cases, the description that you get about what you ought to do is very interesting and very useful. At the same time, one has to keep in mind that, you know, you have to kind of be, you have to remain critical.
Ali, I've got the sock thing under control, and I got to tell you something. It makes me very happy because it used to be out of control, but I got that under control, and I understand the predictive nature of Spotify for music, and I understand how Netflix is able to make suggestions for videos, but you got to tell me, I just don't understand this. How does Gmail know what I'm thinking?
Oh, that's another interesting thing. Email clients like Gmail, you know, they try to also think about how can they make allow users to make more efficient decisions when it comes to handling their emails. So, you know, there are a number of ways that that happens. And again, we take a lot of this for read nowadays because of apps and websites. But essentially what they're doing is they're surfacing things that they think are more important to us. You know, so you see your unread emails at the top. You have this ability to star emails. In some cases, you have this categorization of emails based on, you know, if they're subscriptions, if they're upcoming restaurant reservations, if there's a flight coming up. So all these attempts are in order to make us more efficient when handling large amounts of data. It's unlikely if you're looking for an email to go to the very beginning and then go through your emails one by one, right? There are these other features that we have available to us that make that process much more efficient.
Yeah. I used to live in Boston and spent some time over at MIT across the river, certainly working with people within the engineering systems division where you used to be. But I don't know anything about the MIT Media Lab, and I have to believe it must be a fascinating place. Can you tell us about that environment?
Yeah, it was a great experience. I spent 6 months there working with a group, and then about a year and a half afterwards collaborating with them as well. And it's one of those places where you can where you have to demo ideas. I mean, it's not enough to talk about things; you have to actually produce something and show it at regular intervals. So I think it's a great place to try different things, to not worry about failing. That's how good ideas come about. I think just from failing a few times, and then eventually you hit something that kind of finds its audience and works.
Holly, can you give us a quick example of maybe something that surprised you that somebody presented at the Media Lab, something that somebody demonstrated?
I was never at any of the events, unfortunately, so I can't comment on that.
Okay.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, our guest is Ali Al-Mousawi. He's the author of a book called Bad Choices. It's a fun book. It's how algorithms can help you think smarter and live happier. It also explains really what an algorithm is. It's a pattern of sorts, and it makes the whole field of computer science, I think, a little more approachable if you happen to be someone who's scared of it or thinks it's not approachable. Ali, tell us, you work as a data visualizer at Apple. What is a data visualizer?
Data visualization in its current form, it started maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and the people came to it from different disciplines. So there were the journalists, there were artists, there were statisticians, computer scientists, and in all cases, they were trying to take something that's not very accessible, not very compelling, and turn it into something that's more engaging and useful. So it's essentially about retelling a story in a way that connects with either a broad audience or a specific audience. And so there's a lot of similarity between what one would do in data visualization and what one would do in books like Bad Choices or others that try to take something like science or something that's technical and try to think about how can we retell this story in a way that that's better.
Hmm. Okay, that sounds good. Now, I've been fascinated by the application of algorithms in many different areas of our lives, like almost everywhere you'll find them, right? But the thing that was most interesting to me is how an employer can suss out your gender, for example, just based on how you answer some of the questions. And in a lot of times, your ethnicity just based on how you answer the questions. Now, that doesn't seem very fair to me. And in many cases, I would say that I would try to make the argument that an algorithm is not necessarily able to do that or could make a lot of mistakes on it. But could you talk about that sort of concept, just algorithms making decisions for us in our lives? And I guess I'm wondering about the most egregious sort of algorithms that penetrate our lives.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In the book, I take an optimistic view of algorithms and talk about the good effects that one sees from them. But you're right, one has to also be cognizant of the fact that there is a lot of malice that could be done using them. So we have to be careful of them. A lot of the time when it comes to credit scores or job interviews or other things, you don't really know what the kind of the logic in those algorithms is, so all you get is something. You get a result, and that's all you have access to. So I think it's definitely important to think about transparency and policy and how we can make all these these machines and these algorithms and these models more accessible to other organizations that care about these things. But I will say also that these problems, they might have been exacerbated by machines nowadays, but they've always existed. If you look back 100 years from 100 years ago, they were talking about yellow journalism, for instance. So there were problems with curation and with bias there, and also at history as well. So I think it's essential to kind of be wary of and be critical of kind of the negative effects of machines and of algorithms and models, but to also realize that they have the clock started ticking a lot earlier than a few years ago.
Yeah, interesting. I was just sitting here thinking about last night, pulling up the old laptop while in bed, as I typically do, my husband and I, and we needed a new show to watch, and so we find this one. It's called Ingobernables, and it's a 98% match. And we say, well, it can't be wrong because it's a 98% match of what we, what we've been watching. And so we put it on. It's the worst movie ever, or worst show ever. I mean, mostly because it was dubbed into English from Spanish. And it was also just terrible. And I thought, how did we come up with a 98% match? Okay, so that's where I'm going to argue about about algorithms sometimes getting it wrong, but I don't know, where does that come from?
It's not a perfect world, Lynn.
That's right. I wanted that perfect show last night.
Yeah, I mean, they have, you know, the models are as good as the signals that come in and what they do with those signals. So in some cases, the guesses, they're better than random guesses, but, you know, they might not be what you were hoping for.
That's good.
So I was with my son having lunch last week. He was visiting from the East Coast. We're at a restaurant, and during the 45 or 50 minutes that we're there, every single song that was played on the restaurant soundtrack was like spectacular. We're thinking, man, this is an incredible station. So we asked the waiter, and the waiter said, well, it's the Rolling Stones station on Spotify, and we hadn't heard one Rolling Stones song, but all these other songs were just great. And I said, well, you know, tell me about it. And what he told me was that every server in the restaurant, every bartender in the restaurant, even the managers that are there, every time they hear a song that they like, they go and they give the thumbs up. And if they don't like it, a thumbs down. And over a period of 2 years, they have designed the most incredible radio station, but you can't get it because this is their personal radio station based on the data that they've put in. And, you know, I just thought that whole thing was fascinating. I'm going to start thumbs upping and thumbs downing, even though you got to spend extra time to do it. But that's definitely the way to go. Do you have any experience with that yourself, Ali?
I have not, but I have heard of museums that were experimenting with that. So you would load up an app and you would look at a piece in an art gallery, for instance, and then you could sum up or thumb down it. And then they would do something with the results that they got. So, yeah, it is definitely a concept that's finding its way into the real world as well.
Yeah. So what has most surprised you in the world of algorithms as you've studied this? I mean, you're a curious person. What has surprised you over the years?
I think just the shifts that you find. So when I was in grad school, you know, something like machine learning or artificial intelligence was a you know, either one course or a part of a course. And nowadays, it's an entire discipline. So I think just the pace at which things are moving is very exciting. I have statistician friends who know nothing about even though they have PhDs in the field, they know very little, if anything, about the new advancements in that field. So I think, you know, things are moving very, very fast. It's great to see, you know, people talking about the socioeconomic questions that are important, you know, that go along with these advancements. And I think, yeah, it's also nice that you're seeing that some of the data analysis that's being done is being done for good purposes. So the healthcare data, there's a lot of privacy concerns with that, but there are some cases where, you know, some people are trying to analyze that kind of data and see if we can get better at predicting various diseases as a result.
Ali, it's very exciting because you don't need to understand electricity to be able to use it. You can just hook it up and hit a switch. And AI, you don't have to really understand it anymore. You can buy modules, components of AI, and get it in some sort of self-learning environment and add that to your product offering or add that to what you are building. You don't have to be an AI person, and I think it's very exciting.
Absolutely, yeah. They've turned it into a service, and as you say, it's a module you plug in, and then it becomes, you know, one of the logic units in whatever system it is that you're building. So it is very exciting.
Ali, your book titled Bad Choices, I'm wondering why you titled it that way. It's very interesting.
His first book was Bad Arguments.
Yeah.
He's on a bad train. I have to credit the editor who came up with the title and the subtitle. I actually call it something boring like comparisons, because that's effectively what we're doing. But then she had the kind of the foresight to come up with something more exciting. But, you know, there is a connection to computer science, actually. If you look at some of the literature, you find talk of good and bad algorithms, specifically with respect to efficiency. So something that's more efficient is referred to as a good algorithm. So I guess there is a connection to that as well.
I like it. Bad Choices, How Algorithms Can Help You Think Smarter and Live Happier. Our guest is Ali Al-Masawi, and thank you so much for joining us today on Cool Science Radio.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And we'll be back after these words.
This is Earl Foote, founder of Nexus IT, a proud sponsor of Cool Science Radio on KPCW. Nexus IT provides comprehensive cybersecurity solutions to help protect your business from hackers and today's internet-borne security threats. More information at nexusitc.net or at 435-487-9099.
This is Angela from Peak Art & Frame, sponsors of Cool Science Radio on KPCW. Peak Art & Frame offers local photography and artwork, as well as digital printing, custom framework, and mirrors. Open Monday through Saturday and located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801 or peakartandframe.com.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and company support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
And welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm John Wells here with Lynn Ware Peak. Our first guest this morning, Eric Miller, CEO, and Dana Kunz, Chief Operating Officer for Avion. It's a company that designs and builds simple Bluetooth controls for home automation. In the past, words such as home automation used to be equated with expensive and hard to configure. Not so with a new wave of less expensive, easier to use Bluetooth-enabled products from companies like Avion. Eric and Dana, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Good morning.
Thanks. Yeah. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you here. Maybe we can start with you, Eric, on smart home lighting. People do sort of think of that as expensive, hard to use. Can you take us through the value proposition of your products?
Sure. What Avion's really about, we founded it to change the way the world wires and controls spaces. Today, if you ever want to change where a light switch is located or change what lights it's connected to, it's an expensive, complicated digging up the walls, repainting, something that's almost, you know, something you don't even do because it's so difficult. Or if you go to a control system, you know, that would be tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars. What we've done is take what essentially ordinary embed Bluetooth radios and ordinary lights, ordinary switches, and get rid of the wires in the walls. And then you can change them just with your mobile phone. The products don't cost much more than just the regular switches and lights you would put in anyway. So essentially, you can now do this with no higher cost for new devices and saving all that construction.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And you all gave me an outdoor smart switch, which I really appreciated for my holiday lights. And the outdoor receptacle that I have has a cover over. It's very difficult to stick, you know, the plugs in. So once I got yours in, which was pretty easy, I don't have to go outside anymore. I don't have to plug anything in. I don't have to mess with the cold. I don't have to. Just off my iPhone, I'm able to configure these and set up a schedule. And then, you know, this thing is basically taken over all winter, which is great.
Yeah, what we find sometimes people say, well, I don't know what I would do with that. And you say, do you ever have a light switch that's not where you want it to be or connected to a different light? Or do you ever want to put something on a schedule so that it runs itself? And I don't want to have to go out in my yard and flip timers and stuff. That basically is what we do.
Okay, so as I said to you before we went on air, I found myself asking myself some what I thought were very naive, shall we say. I won't say dumb questions. This morning when I was looking at your site, and I guess it comes back to, you know, how does a wireless system connect to the grid? And what did Rocky Mountain Power have to say about your technology?
Oh, well, you know, the great thing about our system is it works just like your regular switches in the walls. And at the same time, you get the added benefit of replacing some of the control wires in the walls with software and Bluetooth radios. So Rocky Mountain Power is excited about systems like ours because we can actually help you save energy. So there's convenience and peace of mind, but controlling your systems and making sure in a town like Park City, your heat tape goes on and off in a consistent fashion, or your outdoor lights, because we all love our outdoor lights, come on at sunset and then go off at, say, 10 p.m. instead of running all night. That's a big savings for a community like Park City.
So is the savings, the energy savings, in the technology, or is it just in the ability to control more when things go on and off? Is there something about the technology that saves?
Yeah, it's actually in both places. When you're talking about a new home or a remodel or retrofit, you can actually do less construction and less destruction in the case of a remodel, where you just use wireless switches instead of adding control wires for multi-way switches. I don't know. I know John has a house that has a lot of multi-way switches in it, and maybe Lynn, you do too. 3 and 4 way switches. Imagine if you didn't have to run the control wires for the second, third, and fourth switch in a great room. Another really awesome use of this is for accessibility and mobility. You know, here in Park City, we love the National Ability Center, and we enjoy working with all kinds of people and accessibility. So think about kids. A lot of kids are too short to hit the light switch. They get in trouble all the time for leaving the lights on in the bathroom. You can actually move the switch down without destroying the wall so that while they're 2, 3, and 4, they can still reach the light switch. There's another interesting case, teenagers.
Who never turn off the lights.
So imagine if you have a wireless all-off switch in the garage. And so when they walk out the garage, they can hit one switch and the whole house goes dark.
Right. Or you're laying in bed and you say, I left that kitchen light on. And boom, you just knock it off.
Well, and you know, there's another really great use case there that is cutting edge, and that's using the Amazon Echo and voice control. In our house, we have Alexa in the kitchen. We have her in the bedroom. And so when I go to sleep and I look down the hall and I can see the lights still on in the kitchen, I go, Alexa, turn off the kitchen lights. And she does. And yeah. I don't have to make that big, long journey down to the kitchen to turn off the lights.
Right. Hey, if you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Eric Miller, CEO, and Dana Kunz, who's the Chief Operating Officer for Avion, real cool company here in Park City, designs and builds simple Bluetooth controls for home automation. Dana, you had an analogy that just makes so much sense to me because I was in the networking business for a whole bunch of years, and that's that you can go into an office today and you can see a gigabit Ethernet plate, you know, the connection for Ethernet, and nothing's connected to it because we have evolved over a short period of time to a wireless world. It's the same type of thing that's going to be happening in the home space.
Yeah, absolutely. And lighting is a perfect place to do it because you can use technology like ours to untether the light from the circuit. Can you imagine that? Mm-hmm. And untether the switch from the wall. So right. Now you have flexibility that you never even dream possible. It's what we call in the marketing world a blue ocean experience, meaning it's a market and it's an experience that we've never had before.
And we all understand that Bluetooth has certain restrictions, and it certainly works within a home. But let's say you go down to meet some friends in Salt Lake and you say, you know, I'm going to actually stay down here for dinner and I want to turn my outdoor lights on. How do you do this in a remote way?
So this is one of the cool things that's important to balance actually in the home is you want that cool accessibility when you're down the hill. You also still want your lights to work in the middle of the night in the middle of a storm when the internet's down. It's really critical with lighting, and it's a safety thing. So our technology has this nice balance where the switches and the lights actually all talk to each other inside the house and don't need any kind of internet connection to keep working. But you can add a little brick. It's about, it looks like about the size of a power adapter in your wall. You set it up to your Wi-Fi, and then that gives you remote control to anywhere in the world using your phone, Amazon Alexa, web pages, anything else. So we've kind of balanced a good balance of local independent controls, because a lot of the other control systems out there, if the internet goes down, your lights don't work. And that's really just not acceptable. And so we kind of do a nice balance of those two in a very kind of low overhead way. And that's really probably the biggest innovation we've brought to the whole controls market is getting those two things to work together.
I'm kind of stuck on something you said, Dana, and maybe Eric, you can talk a little bit about this. You know, I always think about energy savings, and we tend to leave things plugged into the wall. Our, many of our devices, our printers or, you know, well, many devices. I don't need to name them. I know we all do it. So that draws a little energy, a little electricity, they say, and I've never measured it in my own house, but a wireless system wouldn't draw down on any electricity. Is that right?
Not much. One thing, let me give you a little bit about my my background. I actually have been in the energy efficiency business and helped write and actually advocate for a lot of the energy efficiency policies kind of nationwide for my whole career. So I know something about this.
Yeah.
There's really two ways to save energy. One is to make the device itself use less when you use it. And that's the focus on efficient air conditioning, heating. LED lights are huge. Anybody out there that hasn't replaced their incandescent lights with LEDs, go do it. You'll save 95% of your energy use right there. Energy Star is all about, on things like printers, it's all about getting the standby power very low so you're not wasting energy when you're not using things. The other way is when you're using energy, because you do want lights. I mean, we need lights. We're going to use it when you need it. And that's really where the control side. So we're really part. Mm-hmm. LEDs give us that very efficient, most efficient possible lighting, so you're not wasting energy in the light itself. The controls allow you to use the lights only when you need them and only to the extent you need them. And that's the other piece of the puzzle.
And Eric, there's another piece of that puzzle too, is using it only when you need it at the level you need it, right? So dimming is a really big part of saving energy. Tell us a little more about that part.
Well, a lot of lights, like when we went the whole, what we call sort of the nightmare phase of the compact fluorescent, those, you know, mm-hmm. screw plug, they're terrible lights. I mean, the light quality's terrible. They don't dim. So a lot of people just let them run all the time because they weren't good at dimming. And in the end, they have a lot of toxic materials. They weren't that efficient. They actually didn't save that much.
They didn't last either.
just a terrible, terrible solution. LEDs are like a perfect technology. They dim down to nothing. They're almost as efficient as scientifically possible. The prices are coming down. You can tune the quality of the light, the color of the light. It's really kind of a perfect technology. And it's sort of, we're in this cool phase where we're going to bring lighting, where lighting can do anything we want it to do without it being really expensive in either energy or controls.
So is it simple to get the new wireless, say, bathroom switch off of, to make that change, to make it adapt for, as you said, if you have young children and you want to have a lower switch, how do you make the switch?
So it's really easy. You can take your existing in-wall switch, swap it with an Avion in-wall switch, and those are available either from Avion or from, they're GE branded, they're out there at Home Depot. And then you add an Avion movable switch, which is a wireless one, and you can just stick it on the wall with tape. We have the command strips that are movable tape, or you can actually use the screws and adhere it to the wall that way. So you can do it as a DIY home project, or if you would like to have your electrician swap out the in-wall switch, you can do it that way.
There's also part of our overall business is a lot of leading companies are bringing out products built with Avion technology in from the beginning. And so you'll start seeing a whole range of light bulbs, in-ceiling fixtures, all kinds of track lights. There'll be a whole range. You can pretty much any light in your house is going to be able to come Avion enabled already, and you just screw it in and plug it in, and you're all ready to go.
I want to go back to something we were speaking about earlier, just to make sure we make the point, and that's on a new build, new construction. There's labor involved in pulling wire, and there's also cost involved in buying copper wires. Mm-hmm. So if you have a lot of five-way switches and you're pulling five pairs of wires to one location, you're doing that a bunch of times, you will save money on labor and on copper on a new build. I'm not sure what that would be. Maybe you could help us quantify that, but
the control wiring in a building can be about 50% of the wiring, the total wiring. Mm-hmm. So if you did sort of a 100% Avion build from scratch, you could probably save upwards of 50%, possibly even more in the total wiring and all the labor and a lot of the labor that goes with that.
Dana, we were speaking in the green room before the show began, and we were talking about new dimming strategies and technologies to be able to follow the wavelengths of the sun, the natural sun. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, this is an exciting development in consumer lighting, and it's called tunable white. If you go into one of the big box stores now, into the LED section, they'll have you put your hand in a box, and you can look at different colors. There's warm and cool and in between. And essentially, it mimics the movement of the sun and the natural light. Here in Cool Science Radio, we're having it's fairly cool lighting at the moment because we have morning light, and later in the afternoon it probably gets kind of warm and it feels a little golden in here, right? Well, you can actually have that same experience in your home or office with tunable white. And so we're at the leading edge of bringing that kind of a changeable lighting experience into both office buildings as well as homes.
Great. So I'm curious about why you moved the company here. You were in Northern California.
Yeah, we'd been in the Bay Area for a long time, done a number of technology companies in there. And couple of things. It's getting kind of nutty there. Things are really expensive. It's hard to hire people. The commuting, the efficiency, it's kind of becoming a very inefficient place to work. We'd always, on a personal level, love the lifestyle and like being in the mountains. And so we had a desire ourselves. And Park City was sort of a perfect place. We wanted to be near an airport where we could get anywhere in the world because we work with companies literally all over the world where products of ours are coming out in Australia and all over the place. And if you look at sort of a place with a good technology base and actually a really talented labor pool, University of Utah, other places near an airport, Park City is pretty unique and ideal spot.
So no doubt it wasn't just Park City that you looked at, or was it?
We certainly looked, you know, we looked at Portland, we looked at New York.
London, Paris.
We looked actually all over the world because we could kind of take this anywhere. And, you know, we really liked the culture and the environment here and the talent base. It all kind of came together here. Cost of living is actually, coming from California, it's pretty attractive. So it's not cheap here, but better than others and better than some other places.
I could make it even a little more local. You can walk your dogs here.
Yeah, you sure can.
You can bring your dog to the radio show.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there's an awesome dog here in the studio with us. So everybody just say a shout out to Jack.
Yeah. Jack's taking a snooze right now. Oh, boy. I wanted to ask you about something that I've been thinking about. When I built my house several years ago, I'm sort of a audiovisual nut. So I've got a lot of TVs. I have a lot of Sonos stations, a lot of Sonos receivers for the various rooms of my house. And I was concerned about my utility bill, about being able to, you know, these devices are on and they're pulling watts and things like that. And my AV guy said, no, when they're not on, they don't pull watts and that sort of thing. And I had a pretty high electric bill. So I looked into it and he wasn't correct in what he said. For an example, my DirecTV receiver, and I've got a bunch of those receivers, when they are on and your TV is on, you're pulling so many watts, and you pull like 10 less watts per hour when it's off. I mean, it's just gobbling up electricity in the off mode. Are there any products out there that will help us with that?
There's progress being made. I mean, that's been, I would say, that the whole Energy Star program, EPA's Energy Star program, has really been about attacking that, you know, and I think they've done a really good job of being very aggressive at pushing manufacturers and creating ratings and standards to force them to have standby modes and be careful, you know, tune down the power usage when necessary, because the audiovisual equipment is a really bad actor in that regard. They tend to not care much about it, and they just leave it all on. And it does, as you found, it does use a lot of power. So if I talk about, for example, in lighting, energy, the ratings now are requiring lower and lower off state power and getting very, very low. And it's actually one of the interesting things for our technology is Bluetooth is actually the only radio that has low enough energy consumption to meet that. These next upcoming standards. A lot of the other systems don't. There, I would say, you know, look for Energy Star, especially Energy Star 2.0. Energy Star 2.0 stuff, they've really started to dig into the problem that you had. The Energy Star 1.0, the manufacturers like the DirecTVs, they're low in off mode, but they're never off because they're always connected. You know,
yeah.
So they don't actually ever turn off. And Energy Star 2.0 has gotten more aggressive about saying, hey, you can't just leave it on all the time. You've got to actually look minute by minute at what power levels. And, you know, that would be my best suggestion, is look for Energy Star 2.0.
Okay, because
products.
DirecTV is like 95% of its online. Its offline is 95%
exactly.
consumption of its on. So it's just crazy. I think one of the other things is that they have plugs that you plug in that are wirelessly enabled, so that you can, and maybe that's an Avion product you
Absolutely.
Could use, so that you've got a wiring closet downstairs and somebody wants to watch TV downstairs, so you enable that plug and now you've got juice flowing. Now the problem is the TV and the receiver have to configure themselves, so there's a wait there, and that's why we can get some more help from them if they were able to address that.
Right, you can always use an Avion plug-in switch to be able to put it on a schedule. For example, if you always watch TV in the evening and you don't use the TV at any other time of the day, and you just do have to allow that time for it to wake itself up and
right.
all the pieces to reconfigure themselves.
As much as John here is an audiovisual nut on the spectrum, I would be equal parts on the other side of the spectrum. I don't even own a remote control.
You and me.
I'm happy to hear that. And you work in this technology.
It's a brave new world, Lynn. We're going to have to bring you there.
I know. But for someone like me, you know, where does Avion technology fit in to your lives? And I'm thinking already two places, heat tape and exterior lights.
Yeah, and so you are our target market. We know John's an early adopter.
Right.
And John is what we call, he likes to be the IT manager of his home.
I do.
So important.
No, it's just I love those challenges.
Yeah, good. Okay.
And he doesn't mind rebooting six times to get to the end result. And Eric's sort of in that category too. At our house we do have four remote controls on the coffee table. And the way I turn on the TV is I go, Eric, would you turn on the TV? And so we have voice control in addition to Alexa at our house. And so the great thing about Avion technology is it's set it and forget it. So when you put our light switches and plugins into your house, and once we've used the app to configure, you can put the app down and you never have to pick up your phone again until you want to reconfigure the system. And so we know that people just want to use the switches on the walls, or in our case, the movable switch on the coffee table to access the lighting system. Does that sound like what you're talking mm-hmm. about?
Yeah.
And actually, sure. this winter, I swapped our switches on our heat tape, and it's been phenomenal, because I think, as we all know, there's just about a 3-hour window in any particular day where the heat tape even is effective. I mean, running it when it's 10 below out doesn't do any good, you know, and so being able to pay attention to how right now I can really knock the snow down, and I can do it with just a few hours running them, and I might be at work and I can just pull up my app and say, right now, and I turn it on for that time window, and otherwise I don't.
And then it goes off automatically, doesn't it, Eric?
Yeah, and it'll just then turn itself off automatically. And yeah,
that's,
I think
that is so key. I mean, my energy bill is 3 times the amount per month when I just turn on the heat tape, and I don't know when it's most efficient. When is it most efficient? You said like a temperature range or a time of the
what
day.
What I find is around 20 to 35, you know, sort of when you've still got big snow buildup, and it's going to be there, but it's still cold enough that it's not going to go away by itself. Below about 20 or 15, everything's frozen solid. I mean, your little wire is not going to do much, and you're just heating up the great outdoors. So if you kind of get that, what I found, at least personally, is you get a window in kind of the 20s to 30s, then you get a lot. Then even like 3 or 4 hours will really make a huge difference. And I can do it just like one day or a couple of days instead of every day. So yeah, my bill this year was obviously a much bigger year than last year. It was about a third of what it was last year. So it was saved hundreds of dollars. I mean, it paid for itself in a month.
That's impressive.
Plus, Lynn, when you pull into your house, let's say you have it on the side that your garage is, and you look up and you see the accordion pattern of the heat tape, and everything's melted around there because we haven't had snow in 10 days or 12 days or something like that, then you would definitely turn it off because it's not adding any value at this point.
Right.
So you know, turn it off completely. And I wanted to mention, it's very unusual for us to have an in-studio guest because, you know, we're talking to people from outside of Park City typically, although sometimes in Park City. So here's an opportunity. We have lots of people that are listening in this morning. Do you have any employment opportunities? You are currently on Rasmussen Drive. What are you looking for?
We're looking for product leaders and mechanical engineers and electrical engineers. We do all of our hardware integration and testing here in Park City. We are also always looking for marketing leaders, so people who really understand digital.
Okay, and how would they get in touch with you?
They can go to avion.com. They can call me, 415-987-9798. I'm happy to put my phone number out there.
Sure.
If you're interested in that. And also by email. We're available in all those modes of communication.
And just want to mention your website is, and your company name is Avion, AVI-ON.com.
Correct.
Well, this has been interesting.
This is great.
Yeah. Oh, I got to see you configuring your heat tape. This is going to be awesome.
We'll get you going for next year, Lynn.
Okay.
Eric Miller, CEO, and Dana Kunz, Chief Operating Officer for Avion. They design and build simple Bluetooth controls for home automation. This is just the beginning. They're going to have a whole bunch of follow-on products. You can currently get their products under the GE name or Avion name at Home Depot. And Dana, where else?
Well, avion.com, and actually almost all the big box stores nationally carry the GE-branded products that are powered by Avion.
All right, great. Listen, thanks for joining us.
So great to have you. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
And again, that was Eric Miller and Dana Kunz, and they are with Avion. And Eric Miller will be speaking with the Thin Air Innovation Festival tomorrow at OP Rockwell's. That's Friday from 3 to 5:30. Well, it's a panel, so he's one of the speakers presenting.
He's going to be one of the speakers, I believe, at the end. But
right.
You definitely don't want to get there at the end. You want to get, you know, if you are just going.
So many fascinating speakers with the Thin Air Festival. So again, that began last night. You can go online, thinairparkcity.com, and look at all different kinds of panels if you just happen to be in town. Or even if you're local, they're selling individual tickets, I believe, just as they have space available.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens in the future with that series of products, because there's a lot of big companies in that space, and they're doing lots of cool things. But back to that example earlier in the conversation, where you could walk into a building that might be 1 million square feet, a giant office building, and you look around and you see all these high-speed Ethernet plugs in the wall. Mm-hmm. Nothing's connected to them. Everything is wireless now, and that's where we're going.
Yes, so let's go along with them.
So let's go.
And again, that was an interview that we had in March with Eric and Dana. Really fascinating. So we thought we'd go ahead and rebroadcast that today, considering that they're speaking at the Thin Air Festival. Well, we want to thank our underwriters, the Natural History Museum of Utah, Davidson Orthopedics, Picart and Frame, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, Park City Mountain, and San Francisco Design. And we'll be back after these words.
Hi, I'm Courtney Johansson, owner of 350 Main Brasserie. We are pleased to support KPCW. 350 Main is located in the historic Golden Rule Building at 350 Main Street and serves contemporary American cuisine. We are open nightly at 5:30 p.m. Reservations, menu, and contact information at 350main.com.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, Park City resident and KPCW fan. Our practice specializes in offering a wide array of solutions for knee and shoulder problems. More information is available on our website at davidsonorthopedics.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with John Wells. I want to thank our guest today, Ali Al-Masawi. He's the author of the book Bad Choices, How Algorithms Can Help You Think Smarter and Live Happier. And of course, Eric Miller and Dana Kunz, co-founders of Avion, based right here in Park City. And hey, what do we have going for next week?
Well, early every January, we have Bill Andrews on, who's the senior editor for Discover Magazine, to talk about the top stories of the year. Well, we've been staying in touch with him, and he's going to come on the program next week. We're going to talk about artificial intelligence, some new information on that, which is really fascinating, and also new information on exoplanets. And we look forward to that conversation, of course.
I will look forward to that. You're listening to KPCW Park City. It's time now for National Public Radio News from